This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Crime Over Wine Weekly. It is Monday, April 29th. I'm Michelle Herron. Here are your crime headlines. Opening statements are set to start today in the high-profile trial of a Massachusetts woman accused of killing her police officer boyfriend. Karen Reed is accused of killing Boston police officer John O'Keefe in January of 2022, when his body was found in the snow outside of the home of a fellow police officer. Prosecutors allege Reed hit O'Keefe with her car while dropping him off at a party at the home and then leaving him to die. The boyfriend of Madeline Soto's mother is now charged with the 13-year-old's murder. Madeline's body was found in a wooded area on March 1st. Stephen Stearns, who was the last person to see the teenager, was arrested on sexual abuse charges after investigators found disturbing evidence on his phone. Stearns is set to appear in court on the new charges today. A heated cross-examination unfolded in the courtroom Friday as one of the witnesses in Chad Daybell's murder trial revealed that his defense attorney now owns the property where two of the victims' bodies were found. Daybell is charged with the murder of his first wife, Tammy Daybell, and his second wife's two youngest children, J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan. It has been a wonderful week as we round out the month of April. I am Michelle Herron, being joined by the ever so fabulous Heather Holly. Heather, hello. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you, Michelle?
I am doing good. This weekend has flown by. It always feels like the weekends aren't long enough, especially when the weather is getting nicer and there's more going on. I wish there was like another day in between Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday's for like getting your life in order for Monday. So weekends really are only like one day. So yeah, we do need a third day in there.
Yeah, we need to start a petition. Everybody that is on board for putting another day in between Saturday and Sunday should sign it. And then we should elect them to president. How about that?
Probably won't be worse than what's going on now. Like, why not? We have pretty low standards here.
We can all unite on that, on an extra day in the weekend.
Hear me out. 4-day work week, 3-day work. Like, we don't need to add another day to our lives. 7 days is plenty. Like, we just need to work less.
Yes, we need to work less and be off more.
Yeah.
I feel like you're onto something, and we would probably all be a lot more productive at work and at home.
That's how a lot of the European culture is a 4-day work week. I don't see their world falling apart over there. So I think it's doable.
You need to take a page out of their book. I'm all for it. So, well, to help us get in between the work weeks and the weekends, a lot of us rely on wine. At least I know I do. So Heather, you picked out this week's pick. So tell us all about what we've got.
I did. And it's not a prophecy one. I gave prophecy a break. I do think we will revisit them in the future, but we went in a new direction this week. Didn't have much of a description on it. It's the Astrabella Black, full-bodied, mouth-filling, silky and smooth in texture. This wine balances flavors of strawberry, blackberry, blueberry, and raspberry.
Okay, let's try it.
That's like dessert in a cup.
Yeah.
I taste all those berries very much.
It is very flavorful. It's full. And yeah, I think it, just like how you said dessert in a cup, I think it's like a really good, not so much a dessert wine, but you could have it as a dessert if you're like wanting something a little bit sweeter.
Yeah, I almost, like meal-wise, I almost feel like it would be pretty good with like a red meat or something to kind of like do that sweet and savory balance. Like, I think it would fill that.
Yeah, I like it. Good pick.
Thank you. It was only $9, y'all. So, balling on a budget over here. Holla.
I relate to that so much. You know, I don't, I am definitely not, I do not judge when it comes to the price of wine. I do like this. And yeah, under 10 bucks, like, heck yeah, why not?
And it does, it has a bit of a fizziness to it, like not full on like champagne fizziness, but there's a little fizz in there.
I think that helps kind of balance it out a little bit too. That makes it like not too sweet. I don't know.
Like maybe adds a little like acidity to it to cut the sweetness. The girlies are on board. I do think Liam would have absolutely hated this one.
You think so? But he does like reds though.
He likes reds, but he likes bold. Like this is bold, but like too sweet. I think it's too sweet for him.
So a lot has gone on this week. We have a lot of things to get to. So pour yourself your glass of wine, buckle up, because we're going to just go ahead and jump right in. Starting off with authorities in Missouri. They make an arrest in a double homicide, and they credit the help of AI. Plus, the mystery surrounding a carjacking and murder deepens. Heather breaks down the new details and remaining questions when we come back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for that big test with Study.com. Study.com offers learning materials and test prep, even LSAT study prep guides for all of my legal nerds listening. Unfortunately, there aren't any wine study guides, and believe me, I did check. Listeners can get 30% off their first 3 months of any subscription level using the promo code CRIMEOVERWINE. Again, that's promo code CRIMEOVERWINE, no spaces, for 30% off your first 3 months at Study.com. Learn faster, stay motivated, study smarter with our sponsor, Study.com.
Welcome back. It seems like artificial intelligence is popping up everywhere these days. It feels like you can't go more than a day or so without hearing AI this or AI that. Well, the latest space that we're hearing about AI is in homicide investigations. Artificial intelligence helped investigators charge someone they say is responsible for killing two people in Missouri. The shooting happened earlier this month at Blue Springs Park. Court documents show an AI-equipped camera system helped police find the getaway driver, which was a girl under the age of 18. The camera network is called Flock Safety. It's described as a smarter version of a license plate reader. The Flock cameras are designed to be placed at high-traffic intersections and frequently visited areas, like a park. The cameras can capture more areas 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they can read more than license plates. Police say there was a fistfight at Wilbur Young Park near the volleyball courts around 10:30 the night of April 13th. There was a shooting, and police found at least 28 shell casings. So there was a lot of shooting that happened that night. Police say at least three people fired guns and three people were hit. One of the people hit was also one of the shooters. Police say cameras showed Marcus Earl Lee Savannah get into a car right after the gunfire. It did not capture a license plate, but it did give police a good description of the vehicle. That is where the Flock system comes in. It doesn't need license plates to work. It records the make, model, and other characteristics of vehicles, and police are able to go in and search for those terms. So think of like maybe a bumper sticker, or think of maybe a luggage rack, things that are identifiable on those vehicles. The Flock system then codes the vehicles with those descriptors. Investigators can then enter those descriptors into the system and narrow down their search based on time and location and get photos of vehicles that match those descriptions. From there, investigators can put an alert on that vehicle to get a ping when it's spotted. And that is what happened in this particular case. Investigators used the Flock system to identify the vehicle, and then 2 days later, another investigator received a hit on the vehicle. That's when they were able to make an arrest. Investigators are also able to track a vehicle back in time for up to 30 days, and this can show a hotspot map of areas where it appears frequently, giving investigators information like maybe where a suspect might live. So this is an interesting way that police are able to, that police were able to make an arrest in a double homicide. Heather, a couple of things popped up in my mind as I was like reading about this is like, okay, this is cool and all, but are there privacy concerns? You know, like if this is going to be recording all the time, you know, there's just some red flags that can come up here. But as I was doing more research, I found that it doesn't record in real time. So it's not like the police are sitting there monitoring, watching it, you know, in real time right then and there, but they are able to use it working backwards, and that helps them in their investigations. But I thought that this was interesting, and I thought that you might find it interesting too.
I do. I'm actually, not for this, but for another purpose, have been working on something involving law enforcement and cameras. So very fascinating to me. Kind of about the privacy thing that you were saying, that's what a lot of critics of this will say, that it's a violation of privacy. And that's pretty much for any law enforcement camera. But when you're talking about these, they're at intersections. These are public areas, well-traveled. Anybody could be recording in them. I really feel like privacy is not a concern. I would much rather there be something there that could help solve a case like this one and lead to an arrest in a double homicide than be concerned that they can see me like jamming out at the red light or whatever, making a fool of myself. Like, yeah, I'm belting my heart out to Taylor Swift right now. Okay, leave me alone.
It does also make me wonder if as AI develops and technology like this develops and cameras get better, you know, could it be used in maybe missing persons cases, you know, because if you can kind of put in descriptors, you know, like possibly like tattoos or maybe like the type of clothing that someone might have last been seen wearing, and then police can go in and type that in and pull up, that could be a new way that missing people are investigated. And maybe they already are and we just don't know. I haven't heard of it, but I could see the technology working towards a space like that.
Because that was exactly what I thought of when you started reading descriptors, as in like bumper stickers. I was like, oh, like a person with a tattoo. I mean, it's the same concept, but that one would kind of, that one I would feel uneasy about, I think. Because, yeah, we want to find missing people, but I kind of don't like the idea of law enforcement just being able to type my physical description into their little search bar and be like, oh, she was at 4th and Market at 10 a.m. Any technological system is hackable, so that could be the wrong people could have access to that, and then even the wrong people may be sworn law enforcement and have access to it. AI in general kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, but after you described it, I was like, oh, this wasn't AI doing the work so much as intelligent investigators knowing how to use that AI to get the evidence they needed to make an arrest. Like, nothing was fabricated. Like, they had all the pieces they needed.
Essentially, it sounds like this Flock system is like a really smart database, essentially. And then it takes a human with the appropriate training to then go in and connect the pieces and interpret the information that they're able to find. And I think that is where the fine line lies. You don't want every piece of information ever about individuals just being on the internet where, like you mentioned, it can be hacked. It can be utilized in ways that it's not designed for and things like that.
And then talking about the development of the AI, I like that it takes a human to interpret it. They can't just, the AI doesn't spit it out and go, oh, it's this Lexus that's registered to Michelle. They have the pieces that they still have to put together as the human and analyze. Like, the AI just helps. And I'm kind of surprised that that's new, or maybe just in Chattanooga. Because we do, our law enforcement has a pretty sophisticated camera system. So I know that they have the abilities to go back and watch videos from a lot of places. And to be like, this red Camaro was here at this time and stuff. So maybe that's why I feel that way, just because our city is pretty technologically advanced with its law enforcement.
So this particular department, they had been using this system for about a year. And then in the kind of the Kansas City area, there were multiple departments that also use this system. So it wouldn't surprise me if Chattanooga does. Maybe it's not this particular company. Maybe we just don't hear a lot about it, because sometimes they like to keep their specific ways of investigating in the background. It is pretty interesting. Also, so like I mentioned, we keep hearing AI, AI, AI. There, I believe it's University of Kentucky. They now have like a major. You can go to school and major in artificial intelligence. And that was really interesting to me. I think because it's like so new, it would be really neat to really learn and understand this type of technology and like where it's going. And because it's so hard for us to really wrap our minds around it.
We know where it's going. We've seen iRobot. We know where it's going. Not well for us.
That is true. Like when you really start to think about like humans being replaced with technology and jobs going away because of that, that's a little dangerous.
Yeah, that I guess that's what the full point that I didn't connect when I was talking about the officers having to do the work still. Like this AI is not just replacing them. I would find it problematic and unethical when and if investigations get to that kind of point where AI is the one doing the work, because well, then what if we have AI trials and I'm found guilty by AI? I am a pessimist and I don't like that.
There's just so much value in common sense and critical thinking and real life experiences. Like I don't think that a computer can replace that.
Because, I mean, there's programs and algorithms, but yeah, that doesn't replace human interaction and individuality of different experiences. The algorithm's not going to take into consideration this person had a rough childhood. This person was drunk at the time. Like, it won't have the full picture to take into consideration or have the emotional capacity in some cases that are needed.
I never imagined that we would be on this podcast like talking about AI, but it when I came across this case, I was like, wow, we absolutely have to talk about it. So let us know your thoughts. If you have thoughts about AI, follow us on social media, drop us a comment. We want to know what you're thinking, because this is definitely an interesting topic that we're just going to continue to hear more and more about. You have a crazy update in your case from last week. So I have to hear all this.
Okay. In case you weren't here last week and you missed it, I'm going to try to give like the Glee recap style here, because there was a lot going on and there still is a lot going on. So here we go. On April 11th, an armed carjacking was caught on camera in Winter Springs, Florida. A few hours later, an SUV was found burning with a woman's body inside. The victim is believed to be Catherine Alda Garcia Guerra de Aguavistas, the carjacking victim in Seminole County, or Winter Springs. Police are still waiting for DNA confirmation to say it is her, but they do believe it is her. A green Acura was identified as the suspect's vehicle. That vehicle has been tied to the murder of a tow truck driver the day before Catherine's kidnapping and killing. And that driver had towed the green Acura a month earlier. And I left out quite a few details there, but let's get to some of the new developments over the last few days. First, let's talk about what we learned about Catherine. The 31-year-old lived in Homestead, Florida. She immigrated to the U.S. from the Dominican Republic about 5 years ago. She had a 6-year-old daughter and worked as a hairdresser. Detectives say that she didn't have any criminal history. Her husband told investigators that she was traveling north to visit family when the carjacking happened, but they weren't able to find any relatives in the area that were expecting her. Detectives now believe Catherine was heading north to deliver money and, quote, other stuff for a friend. At least that's what Giovanni Hernandez told Catherine's brother. Hernandez is believed to be the last person who spoke to Catherine. Right now, investigators are working to figure out the relationship between the two and why he was the last person Catherine called. And here's what we know about Hernandez. Federal court records show he's a known member of a drug trafficking organization. He's currently a person of interest in several home invasion and homicide investigations, including Catherine's. Hernandez turned himself into authorities last Monday on a warrant for drug-related charges. Hernandez hasn't been charged in Catherine's death, but two other men have. Jordanes Torres Garcia and Kevin Ocasio-Gestiano face federal charges in the carjacking that led to Catherine's death. According to the affidavit, Torres Garcia admitted he was the armed man who got in Catherine's car. He told investigators someone paid him $1,500 to kidnap and deliver Catherine. Gestiano is believed to be the driver of the green Acura. Seminole County Sheriff Dennis Lima says he now believes the most dangerous people in this case are off the streets, but there are still a lot of unknowns in this case. Like, who paid for Catherine's kidnapping? Who was the other person or persons in the green Acura? Why didn't Catherine's husband call 911 after she called him about the Acura following her and ramming her before her kidnapping? And why was her husband trying to find out information about the lead detective in this case? Investigators say Catherine's husband isn't a person of interest in the case, but they are working to answer the questions I just mentioned. He was cooperative for most of the case, but no longer is, and neither is Catherine's brother. The FBI and Seminole County Sheriff's Office are expected to give an update on the case today.
This all sounds like a movie.
I don't even know if a movie writer could come up with something this good. Like, I'm waiting for the documentary.
Especially with, like, that video that has already been shared so many times on social media, the carjacking video. Like, I could see it being a documentary one day. I wonder what information investigators are going to share about this today.
Unless they, because the tow truck driver thing hasn't officially been connected, that the sheriff does say that, you know, the motive is kind of what we expected from the beginning. This is somehow money and drug related. And I think it's all going to come down to what Catherine's relationship was with Hernandez, who paid for her kidnapping, to kind of figure out what her role in all of this was. Someone who had no criminal history, like, to be caught up in something like this. And, like, not saying because you don't have a criminal history you're a good person, but it's so bizarre.
Or I wonder if, like, somehow she has been collateral damage, you know, that maybe someone that she's connected to, they're trying to get at or scare or intimidate, and that's how kind of where she came in.
And I find it crazy that the two guys who are charged, the one guy admitted, he was like, yep, that's me. I'm the one who walked up there with a gun and pointed at her and got in her car and drove her off.
Well, and, like, and why cooperate at first and then stop?
Oh, no, they were cooperating. It's the husband who stopped.
Yeah, which is why it's like, why cooperate at first but then stop? Like, did they get too close to figuring out what actually was going on?
They didn't flat out say he lied, but the relatives that he said she was going to see don't exist to investigators' knowledge, so didn't exactly tell the whole truth, or it might have been the full extent of the truth he knows. It's crazy that there's that many updates in a week, too, for a case like this. Like, investigations don't happen. Like, kudos to the investigators who took, because this was a chaotic timeline just to follow. Imagine not being able to, like, find the pieces online to put it together. Like, they're actually out there in the field and they're mm-hmm. like, what is happening here? Like, because it's in multiple counties and several hours, federal charges. Like, there's a lot of agencies involved in this. So that's pretty impressive in the interest of trying to preserve the case, because there is such high interest in it. So they have to at least give enough to appease the masses, maybe, in this case. I don't know. This whole thing might have been covered up and taken much longer if the person who was behind her didn't record the video and call 911, because that is who called 911, not her husband and not her.
It really goes back to, you know, the if you see something, say something saying, you know, and a lot of times, like, when sometimes people see something that's messed up, but they just don't want to get involved because they're like, God, not my circus, not my monkeys type thing. Like, you know, so yeah, the fact that person that did, like, record that and did call for help, you're right. Who knows, like, what would we be here today had that person not done
that? Exactly. I don't think so. And I think that that's probably what they were banking on. I mean, he was masked. They took the SUV somewhere else and burned it. Like, I don't think they're anticipating on investigators being able to piece it together that quickly. So, you know, maybe by the time that they did find her, the SUV, nature would have done enough that it would have been much more difficult.
A lot of takeaways in this case, and I think there's going to be more that comes out. Coming up on Crime Over Wine Weekly, excavators discover human remains while building a home in New York. Find out what we know about the discovery so far. Plus, Pennsylvania police are now offering a $10,000 reward in a 2012 missing persons case. What we know about Fawn Marie Mountain's life before disappearing and why it took years before she was reported missing after these messages.
Hello, everybody. This is Liam Collins, the host of the podcast Crime Over Wine, and I'm about to make your Wine Wednesdays so much better. We know that there is nothing better than hanging out and listening to your favorite true crime podcast over your favorite bottle of wine, and that's where we come in. Every week, we share a new head-scratching true crime story while reviewing your new favorite bottle of wine. So your new true crime adventure is waiting for you. Crime Over Wine drops new episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Crime Over Wine listeners. I am Rachel.
And I'm Heather.
We are the hosts of Like Mother, Like Murder.
We bring you the good, the badass, and the crime.
Each week, we bring you stories from missing and murdered
to survivors and women who empower you.
And of course, some mom talk sprinkled in.
Check us out wherever you get your podcasts at Like Mother, Like Murder.
And give us a follow on social media so that we can say hi.
Okay, love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye.
Welcome back to Crime Over Wine Weekly. The remains of an Iowa man who went missing in 2018 were discovered last week on private property in Missouri. Sebastian Husted, who went by Ty, was reported missing in January of 2018. His sister told investigators at the time her 18-year-old brother lost contact with family shortly after sending a cryptic message to another sibling. The remains were found last Tuesday by a turkey hunter. The cause of death has not been revealed. Ty was last seen where he was working at a hog confinement facility, according to authorities. He had just started his job at the facility and was expecting to be a father. The circumstances surrounding Ty's death remain unknown. If you have any information, call the Mercer County Sheriff's Office at 660-748-3165.
Concern is growing for a South Carolina teenager who left home last Wednesday and hasn't been seen since. Kalane Owens is 16 years old. Sumter police say she was last seen leaving her home on Jubilee Drive around 4:30 in the afternoon. She was walking towards South Pike West. Kalane is described as a black girl with black and turquoise hair and twist. She's 5'4 and was last seen wearing a black and blue jacket, a black shirt with a purple and white design on it, black sweatpants, and brown slides. If you have any information, call the Sumter Police Department at 803-436-2700.
Investigators in New York are investigating human remains discovered during excavation work at the site of a home being built. Investigators say the unidentified remains belong to a white woman between the ages of 16 and 28 years old with extensive dental work. Police believe the victim died over a decade ago. State police say a DNA sample from the remains does not match the profile of Robin Murphy. She went missing from the same area in 1995. Call New York State Police at 845-677-7300 if you have any information.
Police in Milwaukee are searching for a black woman who is considered a critically missing person. Shannon Ford is 28 years old. Police say she was last seen around 27th Street and Lisbon Avenue. However, they don't know when that was. Shannon's family says they haven't heard from her in quite some time. Shannon is 5 foot with a slim build. Photos from MPD show she has dark hair, dark eyes, and tattoos on her neck. If you know anything about Shannon Ford's whereabouts, call Milwaukee Police at 414-935-7232.
A Chicago mother is pleading for help in finding her son, who has been missing for more than 2 weeks. Javon Nelson, who went by JB, was last seen on April 9th near the 3200 block of East 92nd Street in Chicago. He was last seen leaving his girlfriend's home, but it's unclear where he may have been headed to. His mom told NBC Chicago the last phone call she had with her son, he said, "Ma, I need help. Ma, could you help me?" She recounts that her son sounded really frightened during that phone call. JB's mom has been holding search parties, looking for her son, hoping to find him. JB is described as 5'9" tall, about 140 pounds, and has a tattoo on his neck. He was last seen wearing a gray jogging suit. If you have any information about Javon Nelson, call Chicago Police at 312-746-6000.
There's now a $10,000 reward for information to solve Fawn Marie Mountain's case. Fawn was last seen in November of 2012 at her home in Clare County, Pennsylvania. She was 25 years old then. According to the Facebook group Bring Fawn Mountain Home, she lived with her partner, Heather Dibert. Dibert says Fawn left in the middle of the night, leaving everything behind, including the urn holding her stillborn baby's ashes, which she typically carried everywhere. Fawn wasn't reported missing for several years. She wasn't in contact with her family when she vanished, so they didn't know she had disappeared until they tried contacting her in 2015 to let her know her stepfather was dying. When they couldn't find Fawn, they filed a missing persons report. Fawn's mother says there was a history of domestic violence between Fawn and Heather. Fawn went to the hospital numerous times because of this, and to this day, Fawn's mother believes that her partner had something to do with her disappearance. Dibert was arrested in December and faces 30 felony charges, none related to Fawn's case. Fawn is 5'2", with blue eyes and brown hair, which was dyed auburn when she disappeared. She has a large tattoo on her back of angel wings and the words R.I.P. Caden. Anyone with information in Fawn Marie Mountain's disappearance should contact PSP Tips at 1-800-4-PA-TIPS. And that's all we have this week. Thanks for listening, everyone. And if you can't get enough of Crime Over Wine, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we will see you next Monday for the next episode of Crime Over Wine Weekly.
Proud member of the Podnougan Network.